This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is the Celtic Soul Podcast. It's episode number 68. I'm Andrew Millen, and my guest on the show today will be Jason Maloney. Jason is the former editor of Shamrock Rovers fanzine, the Glenmalure Gazette, and he now writes for the Matchday programme. A talented writer, he has also the laziest column at our own publication, More Than 90 Minutes. He doesn't really know what a deadline is. Terrace anorak and a football culture connoisseur. He's travelled Europe watching Rovers and Celtic, and has also travelled all over the continent to watch teams like St. Pauli and FC United. He is rumoured to have some smashing times in Glasgow back in the late 1990s. This episode has been sponsored by Mick Scannell and his partner Michelle McFarlane. Mick from Dublin, a familiar face over many years on boats, buses and in airports on his way to see Celtic home and away. And some of our listeners will know Michelle well from her time working in the Celtic ticket office. Mick has been very supportive since we started the podcast, and we thank him and Michelle once again for sponsoring the episode and his kind message after last week's podcast, which read, "What a song, goosebumps all over my body. What a talented, beautiful, haunting voice from Claire Cunningham. Another fantastic show, Milish. Thanks for the journey you take me on for an hour or so every week. You should be very proud of yourself and your very talented sidekick, Ronan. Love the podcast. Best out there by far." Well, Mick, I don't know what to thank you for first, sponsoring us or the lovely compliments. Thank you very, very much, Mick, and keep listening. And if you're a Celtic-minded business, a Celtic supporters club, or a Celtic fan like Mick and Michelle, and you like what we're doing with the podcast and across our independent fan media platform, and would like to sponsor an episode or become a sponsor in the fanzine, please email us at info@celticfanzine.com or contact us through the website or on social media. And if you're a listener, a reader, or both, you can support our independent media platform by also visiting celticfanzine.com, where you can become a member, subscribe, buy or donate for the price of a pint, and if you're a non-drinker, you can subscribe for the price of a cup of coffee. Your support will help us to continue to produce quality, independent fan journalism, fanzines, podcasts, video content for Celtic Fanzine TV, and fan events. And we've been out this week looking at venues, and we're very excited about what we have coming up, hopefully later in the year, but definitely early next year. So, folks, keep the comments and the suggestions coming in for the guests you'd like to join us for a chat. We'll reach out to them and hopefully get them on. Here's a few comments we received since last week. "I listened to your Paul Heaton podcast last Monday. Some great stuff in them. And that comes in from Danny McDonald in Newry. Hope you're well, Danny. I had a wee drink with you recently on the sly, so looking forward to catching up with you again. And best of luck to everybody involved at the Willie Maley Fund up there. They're trying to build a statue for Willie Maley, and we'll have some more information on that coming up in the next few weeks." I don't understand this Paul Heaton guy. Everything he's involved in turns to gold. He's an amazing lyricist and a musical genius. But if a reporter tries to tell him, he rejects it and talks about just being in the right place at the right time and how he's just been lucky. How messed up do you have to be not to recognise how talented you are? And that comes out from Hyde and Laddie, and that came in on our YouTube channel, which has been a slow burn up, but it's starting to kick off now. And I've just realised where you get the comments on that website, so I have a few more from YouTube. Just found Talk of the Terrace podcast and watched it. Brilliant content and laughs. Have subscribed. And that comes out from Kenny on YouTube, no second name. But Kenny, we're actually back with Talk of the Terrace early next week, and Joe Miller is returning to chat to me about his experience on Celtic away days in Israel, because it's in the news at the moment. And the last time Joe was there, he went into Palestine, and he's going to tell us about the reception he got from the local people and what he witnessed and how they live over there and the oppression they are under. Great interview, Andrew. Really enjoyed listening to Peter Hooton. He came across very well. Great stories and memories of music and football in the 80s and the 90s. His strength of feeling and passion for his politics and club resonate with us Celtic diehards. Well done with the pods, and that comes in from Kenny67. Patrick O'Connell, what a great story. I love the way you let people talk. Great interviews. Keep it up, boy. And that comes in from Jane Linehan, from Cork but now living in Japan. Great to hear from you, James, and it was great to chat to you a few weeks ago when Baz introduced me on a Zoom call to you. So I hope all is well in the land of the rising sun, and hopefully we'll get over there to do a podcast someday. Baz keeps telling me he's going to line up with a double gig with The Solution, so who knows what the future holds. A fantastic story, great work by Fergus, and that comes in from Charlie Tully Jr. And Charlie, if you're listening, I'm reaching out to you. I'd like you to come on the podcast and talk about the late great Charlie Tully Sr., your father. That would be wonderful to get you on. So please get in contact. Love the play out tune by Claire Cunningham. Like him zipping Tony Ratton in Sunderland. And here's one that came in from when we put the poem, Aaron's Scott Brown poem out. And it's not even a football fan, and this got me greeting. A beautiful tribute to a man I can't help but admire. And that comes in, and there's no name with that, but it was just a comment that was left on YouTube. So thanks very much. And I'm glad that we have non-football fans looking in at the YouTube channel and listening to the podcast. So folks, keep them comments coming in, and thanks for listening and reading. Scott Brown played his final game as a Celtic player at Celtic Park on Wednesday evening. And Celtic fans got the opportunity to pay tribute to Scott by dropping off flags, banners and jerseys to the stadium. And I'm sure Scott appreciated it, but I thought the impact got lost in between those joint corporate sponsorship banners. And it's a shame that the Green Brigade's solidarity display of Palestine was removed. It just goes to show how far removed those running our club, yes, our club, are from the average Celtic fan on the street. And also from the historical links of why our club exists and why it was founded and who founded it. It's been welcome this season to see players at Celtic Park and indeed throughout the football world take the knee in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement and also highlighting racism. But UEFA don't seem to think that Palestinian lives matter. And on Thursday, Scott Brown sat down with some of the Celtic fan media sites and podcasts, and we sent our very own Erin Boyle along to have a little chat with Scott. And here's how she got on.
Erin Boyle.
Hi, Scott. Erin Boyle, more than 90 minutes. First of
were
all...
Were you singing yesterday?
Singing? No, I was... did you see my poem?
Oh, yes, thanks. Yes, I seen it.
Did you like it?
Yes, much appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Scott. I really appreciate that. I would just like to say a big thank you from the More Than 90 Minutes team and also from the Cano Foundation as well for being a fantastic servant as a charity patron. So thank you very much from both teams and also from 10,000 Kids as well. So thank you.
Not a problem whatsoever.
My question is, over the years, you have graced a number of our More Than 90 Minutes covers. And if we also have a time machine on our Celtic Soul podcast. So if you could jump into that time machine and travel back in time, what memory or moment or game would you relive and why?
I think it would probably be the double treble. I think because everyone expected us to not go and do it again. And for the bunch of lads and how hard we worked, we done the first treble, invincible. We went 69 games undefeated, and then we end up getting beat 4-0 for Hearts. But I think that game, to go back into the air to relive that, would be incredible, because the occasion, getting on the bus coming back down London Road as well, and seeing all the fans, and I've seen people jumping on top of police cars and police vans and celebrating with flags and everything, and it was those occasions that I'm going to live with and I'm going to cherish for the rest of my life, because it's those special memories. And especially when so many people write you off saying you've done the treble, that'll be you, and then we go and we keep pushing and you do double, treble, and then quadruple, and it's just we keep pushing boundaries as far as we possibly could, and that's what these lads wanted to do. They've worked so hard over the years, and I know we had a slight year off, but it's been fantastic. It's been a great journey and I've enjoyed every single moment of it, but I think that one would be the one that I'd love to go back, just to show everybody how well we've done and that we can do it again, and that they kept supporting us and kept having the faith in us as well.
Thank you so much, Scott, and also don't be shy to Keno events. We would love to have you back, and yeah, good luck at Aberdeen, but of course as long as it's not against Celtic.
Not a problem whatsoever. Thank you very much. Much appreciated.
Wasn't it brilliant that Scott heard the poem? And we're going to play out with that poem, Bruni, at the end of the show. If football teams were people, then Jason Maloney would marry Shamrock Rovers, but he'd also keep Celtic as his mistress, and he would enjoy the occasional fling on football weekends around Europe on his many travels over many years. I would describe Jason as a terrace anorak who enjoys the whole football experience, not just the 90 minutes on the terrace. He's also the former editor of the Shamrock Rovers fanzine, the Glenmalure Gazette.
Hi Jason, you're very welcome to the Celtic Soul podcast. How are you after your bout of COVID-19? And what would you like to say to the conspiracy theorists out there? The only guest we've had on the podcast who told us he had COVID was Paul Heaton. So you're in good company. And if I can quote you from social media before you tell us how it affected you, I didn't know if it was Pancake Tuesday or Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, grand. Cheers. Thanks for having us, Milius Grano. I've been following some elite company on this year, the likes of Paul Heaton and Peter Houghton, but glad to be asked. Yeah, the COVID is, it was one of those that got it. You know yourself, the vast majority of people that get it just kind of pass through them very quickly without any real symptoms or real sickness. But, geez, it hit me hard. I think what happened to me, they diagnosed that I had diabetes, which they hadn't done beforehand. So when the COVID hit, the diabetes was kind of spurred into action, for want of a better word, and it kind of knocked me back for six. So, yeah, I was pretty sick for about, 6 or 7 days in the hospital before. Yeah, and I was hospitalised. But I'm getting there now, just still out of work. I'll be back to work the next week or two. So it's probably 2 months since my last day in work before I get back. But as for those conspiracy theorists, my God, them people, Jesus, I'd love to see them. Or go. I wouldn't have been able to get hold of them. I was that weak in the hospital that time. But I was actually thinking about them, definitely, while I was lying. I couldn't get the head off the pillow. It's real. Believe me, folks, it's definitely real.
Yeah, I've spoken to a few mates that have had it, and they've all said the same. Terrible experience. And some of them, Jay, real healthy people, and knock the bollocks out of them, basically.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's one of them things. It's hard to explain to people sometimes when you're happy, just the bouts of fatigue and just having no energy. All of one minute you're all right, the next minute you're not. You're trying to exert yourself. So it's kind of hard to explain. Like, I just wanted to ring the boss and explain to him, while he was still out, he was kind of half thinking, you're out of hospital, that's it, when you're back to work kind of thing. Had to explain it, kind of, it's a little bit worse than that. But we're getting there, thankfully.
Good, and I still, as I quoted you there, I laughed when you were telling people that you had COVID. The Pancake Tuesday, Sheffield Wednesday, just made me smile. Even in sickness, you were giving us a laugh.
Yeah, it was a line ahead. I think it was a mate of mine, follows Clifton, Darren Anderson. I think he used them when we were in Cyprus a few years ago watching Rovers. And there's of course some of you using myself, but I'll give him credit for that line. That's how I definitely felt that day in the ward anyway.
Yeah, I'll definitely use it myself when we're in Europe. Tuesday, Wednesday nights, Champions League. I've been that soldier.
Oh, probably, yeah. It's a good one.
Plenty of points and a dodgy kebab can make the difference between a Tuesday and a Wednesday.
Fairly can. I've been that soldier myself many times. Finish.
Listen, Jay, I mentioned your mistress, Celtic. So let's start there. We couldn't get over to see them live this season. And it's been a painful watch this season on TV. Nobody seems to have any answers. So where do you think it all went wrong?
it just went from disaster to disaster. We were hoping, you know, there were a couple of setbacks at the start. Obviously, the COVID thing and then Ballingoalie, and then a couple of matches cancelled, and then there was kind of panic set through. If the Huns win their few games in hand, they'll be 10 points clear early days, and we were thought that could be a problem. But then I think we had to start to see we won them few games in hand, and it was, you know, there was no gap then, but little did we know what was going to happen. When you look back in this season, I still, you know, at the time when it was happening and, you know, we lost up the form around October, November, and we were falling behind, and, you know, the question marks about Lennon were starting to, you know, to be raised by everyone and quite feasibly. You know, I was thinking, ah, there's something really wrong there, and it'll all come out eventually, it'll all come out in the wash, we'll find out what happened. But just thinking, I don't think we're ever going to find out. You know, it's just one of those seasons. Absolutely remarkable for all the wrong reasons. Like, you know, nobody could have, you know, it's probably been said a million times on this podcast and in written word and on Celtic forums and blog, etc. Nobody could envision how bad the season would have happened. You know, if somebody said to you at the start of the season that the league would be over, like practically over by Christmas, but, you know, literally over in March, you would have said, stop out of that. That's never going to happen, you know, but just things just start going wrong. And then obviously, you know, when we had a little bit of hope, we got a bit of form before Christmas, brought sorrow and turmoil in the team. And then the whole Dubai thing hit again, and then having to play 11 second team players virtually in two home games that we only drew, and that just knocked us back. That put pay to any challenge we had then after Christmas. Just a total disaster of a season where, and that could go wrong, did go wrong, you know, madness.
Yeah, and it's like the COVID vaccine here, Jay. With the Celtic support being so divided, people started to raise eyebrows early European form. And, you know, that's when people started to question Lennon in the job. And then that grew as the season grew and the fans became more divided. I'm not saying people were in or out of the Lennon camp, but maybe some of the actions, you know, some of the older fans were saying bed sheets and banners isn't the way to go. You know, this is the way to go. And everyone has their own opinion how you address stuff at the club. But as I said, like the COVID-19, you know, a few weeks ago there, we had nurses fighting with teachers fighting with childcare workers. All good cases to get the vaccine forced because they're in the front line, as they say. But the government are delighted when they're all fighting because it takes the attention off them. And it's the same. The people who run Celtic seem happy that, you know, the different associations aren't united. The Trust are out doing their thing. You know, the ultra groups are there. They're doing their thing. And then individual fans and some of the bigger supporters are doing their thing. So it seems to be they're happy that there's no collective of everybody together pushing for change at the club.
Yeah, obviously the Celtic support is just such a broad church, you know, and it's huge. And a lot of people follow Celtic for, you know, different reasons that you might support, you know, especially in Ireland, if you follow a Man United or Liverpool, you're following them for football reasons or some abroad to a game. With Celtic, we all know it's kind of, there's an emotional attachment there. And this is where a lot of fans would be like that, you know, and you'd call them maybe the faithful true and true brigade. And there are a lot of fans like that that can see no wrong in Celtic or what the club do. But it was seen back at the Celts for Change time, you know, sometimes radical action is needed, you know, or, you know, some kind of protest is needed to get this up and running, to make people aware that what was going on with the club was wrong. Like the Lennon situation should have been probably resolved November, December at the very latest. But in saying that, and I said at the time, if they had to relieve him of his duties then, they probably would have just put Kennedy in then anyway, because it just seemed very apparent that there was no plan B. Nobody kind of lined up. And I think that was, obviously, as I mentioned a few minutes beforehand, we're all taken aback at how quickly the demise was and how quickly the season was, you know, was petering out. So they had nobody lined up. They had nothing, you know, they expected Lennon to stay there. We'd win 10 in a row and he'd go off into the sunset. Peter Law would go and that everybody would be happy days. The 10 in a row was achieved. But it didn't quite work that way, you know. And obviously, yeah, they kind of, you know, they do use that, all success of Celtic boards over the years, you know, they've used that emotional attachment, knowing that there would be a certain section of support that, you know, that would, that, and fair play, they are there, they're loyal supporters, and, you know, they do stay, you know, loyal to the club and are wants to criticise the club, you know, without real foundation that they would think. And the same with Lennon, I suppose. Lennon's career as a player and a manager did deserve him, you know, some kind of, you know, support from the broader support. But it came to a stage there, you know, that we all knew, and you know, it was just getting crazy. Match after match, poor result after poor result after poor performance. And there was no action being taken with Lennon, you know, and that was the most frustrating bit, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's kind of, Lenny, as you say, as a player and as a manager, you know, his CV speaks for itself. You know, it's like the old boxer that doesn't know when his time is up. And it's the same at Lawwell. It's a long, long time to be a CEO of any company. And football clubs are a little different. And it just, everything kind of went stale. And if rumours had to be believed, there was too much influence from suits and not enough influence from tracksuits.
Yeah, that seems to be the way. Like, the influence that Lawwell has the club, like, you know, we don't know the ins about how much it is. Well, it's become apparent how much it was, like, you know, and how much is Desmond giving him a free role to run the club. And obviously that comes back to, you know, years ago when you talked about, you know, you could judge a manager obviously on his performances, but on his recruitment, you know, and the players he brings in. But there's question marks at Celtic. Who was signing the players? Did Lennon want Baracus? Did he want the Jetty? You know, did he want these players? And was he happy just to toe the party line? He was in there in the city, he was a manager, he was getting paid a good wage, managing the club that he professes, like, obviously that he loves, and he's been there, you know, like, so it's hard really to, well, I think Lawwell overall is to blame. Lennon definitely was, let us down with some of the, you know, the tactics and the performances this year, but the inaction from the board, you know, particularly Lawwell, and, you know, we don't know much influence Desmond has on Lawwell, you know, is he telling Lawwell what to do and give him the free rein? So initially for me, the portion to blame with Lennon, definitely the manager, you know, the players shouldn't perform from, but always goes back to the manager. But with Celtic, you know, as he went through the months of November, December, January, you know, the inaction of the board makes them wholly culpable, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I wrote an article in the fanzine, Jay, about Lawwell's time at the club, and, you know, his CV speaks itself as well. Very successful time, and a time maybe when, you know, we were downgrading from the budget that Martin O'Neill had. And the gap since then, like, the gap between us and teams down south is massive. You know, when you think, you know, Martin O'Neill left Leicester to come to Celtic, whereas Brendan Rodgers left Celtic to go to Leicester. So the gap is, you know, especially financially, is massive now. And it's going to be so hard for the new manager. You know, the only one that seems to be in talks with the club is Eddie Howe. And if this is true, it's the longest talks ever. Of a, you know, like this, if he's been in talks, he should have been in earlier, because as you said, if Lennon went in November or December, it looked like Kennedy was coming in. The Kennedy project hasn't worked. We haven't improved. Some will argue that we've come backwards or we've just stayed static. So if Eddie Howe comes in, or if it's another manager, the longer we wait to come in, because with the Champions League campaign, it could be another kind of Gordon Strachan with the Emilia Bratislava, because he's going to have a magic wand, because we're in the qualifiers route. We're going to be playing champions from countries who are on par with us and have been better in Europe than us in the last couple of seasons. So unless we're really lucky with the draw, I wouldn't be confident of us being in Europe after the summer.
No, and obviously what we've all made, you know, points about over the years about us not being fully prepared for a Champions League campaign beforehand, you know, the lack of signings, you know, it seems to only kind of reacted, you know, if you lost the first leg, you know, the going back to the Boyetta situation where he kind of went to the street, that wasn't sorted and we hadn't got a centre-half, and, you know, people say a centre-half could have made a difference of making the Champions League one or two of those years. So this year, definitely, like, there's a huge job on for whoever comes in. And with the Eddie Howe thing, it looks like he is getting the job. Everybody, the sources that seem to be right are all pointing that direction. But they set their stall out very good. And I'm just thinking, you know, the word that Eddie Howe would not make his mind up or come to the summer was bandied out there very early. And I'm wondering, is the reason for that we don't know? You know, why was that? And we all thought the whole fire. Well, whereas, you know, the logical thing to do was someone to come in 6 or 8 games, maybe longer to go in the season, to assess the squad, see who we need, who's surplus requirements, talk to the players, see is Chrissy really want the way, does Eddie really want the way, then we know we plan about them. Hopefully some kind of thing has gone out in the background, on the background of hell, because if he's coming in just fresh for only a couple of months to deal with this, and obviously you have the European Championship this year as well, where it's going to be probably a few Celtic players are probably tied up in that as well, you know, so that's probably going to affect preparation as well. But it looks like Howe's getting the job, and, like, again, it's going to come back. If Lawwell's gone, but there's rumours too that Lawwell's going to move into a kind of less influential role on the board. We don't know about that, but, you know, the director of football is going to be huge. You know, as I spoke, you know, earlier, recruitment of football is different these days. You know, beforehand, you could just put it all down to the manager. Now, Howe has a bit of a, you know, with Bournemouth, the recruitment was a bit up and down. I mean, obviously brought the likes of Callum Wilson, Nate Nacke, and, you know, Ryan Fraser were good signings for him and produced the goods for him. Rudder had he spent an awful lot of money on Dodds from Liverpool, the Lucia man, Solanke, and Jordan Oyip. I think he paid 15 or 20 million for them too, you know. So again, it's down to who's going to do recruitment. And obviously, he's not going to be in the market for 15 million or 20 million players when he's managing the Scottish Premier League team. And that may well be a good thing, but we'll see how he goes. But again, the announcement seems to be imminent, but it really needs to happen ASAP.
Yeah, it's funny as well, Jay. Eddie Howe, like, I don't get in, you know, involved in these click and bait sides, you know, the headlines. Anytime a manager comes involved, and the latest was Mourinho when he was sacked from Tottenham. And, you know, they're putting out 10 articles a day on who the next manager is. The only firm thing I heard, and this is over months, I got a text one Friday evening of someone who would never speculate. But he said to me, look, he says, Eddie Howe's the only one they're talking to. And it looks like the signing. So I put a bet on. Now, I'm going to lose my bet because Kennedy beat 10 games in charge, you know. But when I went back to him a couple of days later and I says, who told you, you know? And he said, someone close to within Celtic Park, an ex-player. So I thought, right, he wouldn't say who the player was. But, and yeah, he was the only one. But yet there was fucking pages and pages and pages on all the websites about, you know, X, Y, and Z becoming the next manager. I didn't even mention it. I didn't even write about it because I thought, you know, this could be just, you know, an ex-player blowing his own trumpet. But it looks like back then he was the man with the in the know, and maybe a current player who he had played with at the club maybe passed on to him that's who was coming in. And if a manager's coming in as well, there's players going to leave. We know that. There's players out already. Polish Paddy went to the States without ever making any impact. Duffy's come back down south. A lot of people blame Duffy, but you can't single out one player in this season. But then as well, you know, probably the most influential player over the last decade at the club has been Scott Brown. And he leaves now for a coaching role, which makes me wonder, you know, if Eddie Howe's coming in, he must be bringing in his own coaching team, because Peter was picking, well, allegedly Peter was picking the dugout for Lennon. Tommy Johnson had said that Lennon wanted him involved and Peter had knocked it back. So he's the only one that's come out and said that they didn't want Tommy involved with the club. And he's kind of a well sought after in football. Martin O'Neill took him to Forest that time with him, and he was the deal breaker when Henrik was meant to go to Southend because he opted to go to Blackpool. So with the likes of Brown leaving, you're hoping that the manager does come in with a backroom team that he trusts.
Yeah, I'd imagine that would be definitely going to happen. Like, I think Howe probably won't be short of offers in England either, you know, and that was obviously the fear. If we were throwing all our eggs into one basket, you know, I can't see that happening. And then at the last minute, Spurs or a Newcastle or a Crystal Palace come in for Howe, and then we're left there, you know, with no plan B. Now, it wouldn't surprise you at Celtic to a certain extent, but surely they're after getting some kind of guarantee or, you know, pre-contract signing, something like that from Howe, you know. And like I said, a man of his stature that could have a pick of a few clubs, he's not going to accept, surely, like, you know, that a backroom team, which is very unusual anyway in football, that someone else would pick his background team for him. Wherever about who's going to be, if there is going to be a technical director or a director of football, which may be chosen by the club, which is probably common practice, definitely, you know, he will need to, you know, he'll bring in his own backroom staff and work with people that he knows.
We'll have a new director of football or sporting director or whatever they're called now, which he has to have a link there as well.
Yeah, well, that seems to be what some people are saying. Again, you know, everybody knows things on Twitter apparently, but that was kind of one of the sticking points, you reckon, who was going to be denominated director of football, you know, who was going to be, was it someone that had a relationship with Howe beforehand, or it was someone that Celtic had pinpointed beforehand? Like, you know, Celtic could have been down the road of going for a technical director, you know, while Lennon was still there, and, you know, they could, you know, for the future, before Howe was even mentioned. And the guy at City, I think Fergal Harkin, I think that's his name, he was muted a few times as well. So you wouldn't know the way Celtic operate if they had been down the line working with him and couldn't have promised him the job. We just don't know, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's the frustrating thing. And hopefully now, you know, we're recording this podcast on Thursday, and hopefully when it goes out on Friday, that Celtic don't announce someone else. I mean, I'm egging our face, Jay.
I know. I'm sure you can react to that, Millish. Just a quick, put a quick one out, quick video out. Stop the press.
Listen, we mentioned Scott Brennan now. You know, one of the most influential players over the last decade at the club. Moments of madness there in his career and a lot of sendings off and stuff like that when he stood in Neymar. But, you know, he's really been there at the heart of that midfield and the heart of the team and, you know, pushed us on. And some great memories from him. We only look back to last season when we beat Lazio in Rome and, you know, when Scott Brown won the league at Rugby Park. And he must have so many memories to take away. What do you make of Scott and his contribution?
Well, if you're having this conversation about Scott Brown, I'll have to be perfectly honest, before Brendan Rodgers got the job, probably be a different type of conversation, to be honest with you. I have to say, I wasn't a huge Scott Brown fan, like a lot of people. You know, I think certainly Brendan Rodgers transformed him, and, you know, whatever role he gave him, he was outstanding for those 2.5, 3 years, and even after Rodgers left, you know, he was the best player in Scotland consistently. I think he won it 1 year. The one thing, even though I said I didn't rate him that highly, and when his performance went top class under Doyle, even, you know, and I think people, there was question marks about the fitness of the squad at that point. But the one game where I think where I seen Brown from a different light was when Ireland were playing Scotland in those European Championship games, particularly the one at Celtic Park. I was watching Scott Brown as an opposition fan for the first time, really. You know, before you hark back to his time at Hibs, whatever. But watching him play for Scotland against Ireland, I kind of noticed and seen the job he did. He was harassing people. He was getting stuck in. He was driving the Scottish team forward. And the first time I said to myself, Jesus, this is what this guy's about. And I wonder the opposition fans don't like him, you know. So I was getting that kind of view of him as an opposition fan for the first time. And then, as I said, since Rodgers has come in, he's just gone off the charts. He's been absolutely outstanding. He's just a leader. You know, if you want to pick a leader or just pinpoint or give the characteristics of a leader or any football team or any walk of life, just look at Brown, as mentioned Lennon there, because Lennon did make a statement about everybody in the dressing room respecting so much, you know. And look, I think he's been in the Scottish Player of the Year team, I think 6 years. He's won Player of the Year award. He's lifted what is it? God knows how many trophies he's lifted for Celtic, you know. It's a 32 or 30, a huge amount of trophies that are, you know, he will go down as there are a few people there are still kind of don't rate him as highly as they should as a puller, but you can't just argue with his contribution to Celtic. And, you know, I hope he gets a great send-off tonight. Obviously, again, it's a pity there's not going to be a crowd there. I wonder, will we get a few people turning up, you know, outside the park like you do when there's a new manager announcing a new signing? He deserves some kind of send-off. He's absolutely been brilliant for Celtic. And obviously, he's gone away now to learn the coaching game with Aberdeen. So I don't think too many people will be surprised if we see Scott Brown back in the Celtic dugout or back on, you know, in Lennox Town anytime in the future.
Yeah, Jay, he's 24 winners' medals in Cup and Leagues at Celtic. It's an amazing haul.
He would have got 22 if he'd held another 3 years. But yeah, no, it's absolutely brilliant. It's unbelievable.
You, as like I said, I describe you as a terrace anorak. For a footballer to win one major medal in his career is brilliant. But to have that haul of medals, and we've been spoiled, Jay, because a couple of weeks ago there with Jackie Meaton on the podcast, and Jackie had seen the first nine in a row before he emigrated to Canada, and he'd also been to a European final. And I always said to him, I never would have thought that I would get to a European final or see Celtic doing nine in a row. It's just been you know, when you think back to the 90s, when it was just, you know, everything that could go wrong went wrong. It was like, you know, it was like this season, only for, you know, we couldn't see the light until Fergus came in and the sales for change, you know, the fan group. So it's been a good time to be a Celtic fan, with the exception of this year, which has just gone tits up.
Yeah, well, with success and continued success becomes expectancy as well. That's why kind of so I think the way the season went actually kind of petered out so quickly that the disappointment wasn't just, you know, thrust upon us, and it was just gradual. Whereas if you'd have lost the league, imagine if you lost a 10 in a row on the last day of the season, you know, you'd be gutted at that. But it's been just shocking. And obviously you go back to the 90s there then, and I think it was all those years of the 90s that we spoke about going over there when we're points behind them, you know, we're finishing behind Motherwell in the league, we're not qualifying for Europe, I think, one season. You know, it's days like that, you know, and I think I was a season ago holder then a couple of during that time, you know, for a couple of those years. Definitely the season in Hampden, the season ticket, and I think the year after with Fergus, when we rebuilt Celtic Park. But, you know, all those bad days, you know, they do make you appreciate. I know it's a cliche in football, but when the good times come around. I always bring back to one night, and it's been said a few times, just the night we lost the Cup semi-final to the Huns in Hampden. And we were in the open end in Hampden. The roof hadn't been built on the Celtic end at that time, and it was absolutely lashing rain. They went down to 10 men, and they beat us 1-0, and McCoy scored. And it was just horrific. It was one of the most horrific memories. We had to get the boat back to Ting. I remember we had to travel home that night, and we were absolutely all just soaked in the skin. And we had to travel back 2.5 hours or whatever back to Stranraer, wait around, get the ferry back there. And you're getting back to Dublin at 6 o'clock in the morning. Some lads went to work. Some went back to bed. It was just a miserable, miserable time. You know, if you said to some of the lads on that, as you get off that bus soaking wet, you know, on that day, I think it was 91, and told them Celtic we wouldn't know in a row, and we playing in the European final with 80,000 Celtic fans travelling to Seville, they would have said, get a bit of a bad man. But that's football, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny, the lows. I remember coming out of Seville, and the first person I met was Mark Bourke, and he was abusing some Porto fans. He was, and it's not like Mark, you know, you wouldn't normally see Mark losing the head. But he was just so frustrated at the diving and the antics of the Porto players. And I also think back, Jay, to, you know, there's been some great times under Martin O'Neill. It was just competing with the fucking best teams in Europe. And as we said, the European final. But there was lows as well. I remember leaving Motherwell on the bus, heading for the ferry, and one thing you could always look forward on, that was after we lost the league, just got McDonald's goals. And I remember getting onto the boat, and you always look forward to having a point on the boat when you get off the bus. And it was a dry boat because the Huns had wrecked the boat the week before and wouldn't serve us drink. So that was definitely the longest bus trip I think I've witnessed, even longer than the Cumbria Town UEFA Cup game, which was, I think, 27 hours over and back in the, I'd like to say the same day, but it ended up going into 2 days. But there's been some great times on the buses, Jay, as well. Like, you must have some great memories of buses to Glasgow and elsewhere.
Yeah, there's great trips in Napier. All their buses left at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, we left on, I think at the start, we used to pick up your crowd up on the way in the leak, you know, and draw the, you know, leaving at 4 a.m, you get back about 12 o'clock, you know, it's just that some of the lads would go out the night before as well, or sometimes even the Rovers could be playing on the Friday night, you go to that few points. What was the point in going home? You go to a nightclub and then getting on the bus at 4, and sometimes you wouldn't be, a lot of times the lads, again, we get to Glasgow at 12, a few points to welcome in, and then you go to the match, and then a few lads would be worse for wear, you know. There would be probably more than one occasion where lads fell asleep at the match, you know, after being out the night before, and then doing it all on the way back. But you mentioned 27 hours there to that game in Wales. I've done a couple of longer trips than that to Europe with the Gallagher Travel Club, you know, Danny Mullen and Dave Hughes, Spud Hughes, who were on that trip. And
a couple of legs.
Gone to Milan on that, you know, gone to Milan and Barcelona. And again, disappointments in some of them games as well. Remember, drawing 1-1, you know, with a very good Barcelona, we're drawing 1-1 and the Jordi Alba scored in the last minute 2 minutes ago to beat us 2-1, and then you've all that travel back. You're sick of results like that, you know. But even then, we were half competitive. But some stories in those on those trips, you know, you travelled 40 hours and just getting there. I remember we went to Milan for the Milan trips. I think it was 2 at AC Milan and 1 with Inter, that we stayed in Lake Como. And, you know, Lake Como was a bit of a picturesque tourist spot, you know, beautiful place, picture, and built into a hotel just right on the lake. Near the Ibis, and all these tourists are there sitting outside Al Fresco having their meals. The next minute, coach load of Celtic fans after being on a bus for 27 hours just roll off the bus and the sight, I'm looking at them, but the sight to behold, you know, that screaming Chucky Allard and the tourists just saying, what the hell is that? Well, the good cracking them trips, I tell you, definitely. The way back is just, going over is grand because you're looking forward to the game and that. But when you're 25, 30 hour bus journey on the way home, it's kind of, oh my God. And the thing about that, the ferry on those trips is only about an hour and a half. You're only doing like Dover to Calais, and it's the shortest part of the trip almost. You know what I mean? The rest of the time, you're just sitting on the bus. Obviously, they went in dry buses.
And your good friend, Jerry Brady, is still flying the flag on them buses.
Oh, he hates planes. He loves them buses. He'd rather go on a bus anywhere, you know, Croatia around 40 hours, I think it was. He'd do that rather than get a plane. Suits him better.
I think the last time I seen him on a bus, I think it was Rennes last year in the Europa League. I'm almost sure we walked up from, there was a march up from the city, and it was great because the Rennes people, it was a real welcoming city. Sunshine out, September. Really, really great day. And we actually played well that night. Should have won. We got a draw, but we're walking up to the stadium and having a few beers. And when we got to the stadium, the buses were parked right beside the stadium. And there's good old Jerry with a carrier, the boot open. Help yourself. The legendary figure on a welcome sight on a hot day in Rennes.
That'd be Jerry, all right. Yeah, he'd love all that. Yeah, he does that. He'd be harking out for another European trip. He'd probably be looking at flights and all that early, as we all do, to try and book it early, get a good price. Jerry's just waiting for the bus, you know.
Yeah.
He loves it when you get a German or a French team, because you know there's going to be a bus to that, you know.
And it's brilliant as well, but because the police were cool, we were basically at the turnstiles and they were allowing us to have a few beers, you know, because we were attached to the buses. And because sometimes, you know yourself, Jay, you go to some cities and they don't treat you so well.
Oh, definitely Spanish, Italian police will be a bit different than some of the other ones. Yeah, definitely, without them.
Especially, Vigo and Valencia away. There was definitely battens drawn on them games. But anyway, look, you mentioned Rovers there. A different experience to Celtic during the lockdown. You know, champions and a club that has been through so much. You know, both success and failure over your lifetime. You know, and the fans will eventually take control of the club. So tell us a little bit about that journey. And then a surprise gentleman enters the fray recently in Dermot Desmond.
Yeah, we're Rovers, yeah. But I've been following Rovers since, it'll be that game in the late 70s. My dad brought me as a kid. But really start going in 83, you know, regularly. And we won, just good time to start following Rovers. We won the 4 titles in a row. And, you know, obviously going to Milltown every week, it was great, great football from that team. And obviously the loss of Milltown, you know, if I go quickly over, obviously Rovers lost Milltown and we were on the road for 22 years without having our own home ground. And that was difficult. And as you say, you know, we went through real financial difficulty where the club almost went bust. So what was originally called the 400 Club, which is now the Members Club, was actually set up around 2003, you know. And it was set up because the move to the ground in Tala had stalled and, you know, the original then backers being there had pulled out. And the ground lay idle, even though the foundation had been set up, even for the main stand and the pitch was there on the property. It just lay idle for, you know, for years after years after years. We were talking about moving in there. I remember 97, 98. We thought we'd been there in a couple of years max. And we didn't actually move until 2009. So back to what I said, the members club was actually set up just to have people there put money in to help, you know, contribute to the stadium and get the stadium over the line. Okay. But that became the least of our worries then when the club went into examinership and went into, you know, almost went bankrupt. You know, we were at the whim of the judge to keep us going and to give the go-ahead to pay off the creditors. So luckily that club was founded in 2003 because that was used as a kind of financial basis where the judge could see or the financial people would see that there was 400 people contributing a monthly fee for the last 2 years and there were funds built up and there was a, you know, a going concern that would carry on in the future and give the club some kind of financial stability. So that was brilliant that was there. So the club was kind of saved. And in 2005, you know, we came out on the other side and we're a fans-owned club. You know, we're 100% fans-owned club. We're a big chunk from Ray Wilson, a long-time Rovers fan, lifelong Rovers fan who lives in Australia. Yeah, so we were there and it's that club. And then we moved to Tala and we won the league twice, you know, in the matter of twice in the first 3 seasons in our new ground in Tala. And I just remember thinking back about the bad times and, you know, I remember we beat a team in Israel to qualify to play against Juventus. This was in 2010. I remember we flew to Israel and we didn't expect to win the game and we won and we had to fly back through Turkey. We had about 10 hours stopover in Istanbul. So we went into Istanbul. View us. I remember just sitting there, 45 degrees, sitting in an Irish bar in Istanbul and just looking out and just there was couple of lads just talking to each other, me and my mate, and they said, we're playing Juventus next week. And we just started laughing because 5 years ago, the team only said, we're going bust. We're going out of existence. And just 5 years later, you're playing against Juventus in a competitive game in European football, you know? Fairy tale stuff, really.
Unbelievable, Jay.
And now you mentioned, obviously, Dermot Desmond investment has come. So the way the club is run now, you know, we still hold 50% of the club as a members club. Ray Wilson, who I mentioned previously, is 25%. And Dermot Desmond did make an investment of €2 million, which gives him 25% share, him and his company, of the club. Now, that was, you know, welcome into us, into the club, for £2 million, brilliant, €2 million. A lot of that has been invested in the academy. I think what attracted Dermot to the club, what was the youth academy we have there, the SRFC, and then the facilities we have in Roadstone, and he was kind of keen to get involved in that, and he's had that input. Now, the €2 million, obviously, most will be going towards that, but it's probably, you know, it's probably come at a good time and a bad time, you could say, because it came just before the pandemic, and obviously all clubs are struggling, you know, so a lot of that money might have been, you know, filtered away without us seeing the full benefits of it, you know, but obviously that's not, some of it has been parked off to help with the, you know, the continual running of the, and, you know, further establishment of the academy. Yeah, so he is involved. We're also 25% of the club now at the moment, yeah?
Yeah, that academy had Damien Duff, and I know a young lad that was playing under Duff from Drogheda. He was travelling up and down early mornings, and Duff had brought something a little different. He was on about the amount of times that, you know, a kid touches the ball in Ireland compared to across the water and in Europe, which was a kind of a strange one. But I was talking to the kid's father, and he was explaining what Duff was on about. And also, a young keeper went to, was it Man City? Went to, he's out on loan now, played for Ireland recently, the senior team. And
yeah.
So obviously there's a good youth academy now. And that's why you said Dermot's got, has he got involved because does he want Celtic to have first pick of the players, or has he got involved because he wants something back for his €2 million? Because it's a fan-owned club, so where does Dermot fit in?
Yeah, that was a question we're all asking ourselves. We're all saying, why is he, like, you know, someone like Dermot Desmond doesn't throw money away, you know, he's a billionaire for a reason, we all know that, you know. What we were hearing was he just wants to help out, you know, £2 million to someone like €2 million to Dermot Desmond is it's just a drop in the ocean, really, isn't it? But, you know, it was, I won't say it's a goodwill gesture. There's no way billionaires throw money for a goodwill gesture. But apparently, like, it was Brendan Rodgers who put him onto it. You know, Brendan Rodgers come over and, you know, we'll always play them couple of friendlies against Celtic when Rodgers was in charge. He came down to the academy, apparently, Rodgers, and he think he even travelled on a team bus. Rodgers played against Cork away the night before we played Celtic in one of them games. And Rodgers actually travelled down with Stephen Bradley on the team bus with Rodgers to watch that game. And apparently it was him who kind of, you know, put the idea to Dermot Desmond about what was going on with the academy, you know. Obviously, then the people think Dermot Desmond involved with Celtic and he's involved with Rovers now. That there could have been a direct link from Celtic to get players. I think Celtic will be, I think the way it works out is that Celtic don't get first choice as such. Celtic may well be informed about players, you know, coming through. But, you know, if Celtic offered €100,000 for a player and Man City offered €400,000, you know, he's going to go to Man City, if that makes sense, or any other club, you know. Mizunu, the guy you mentioned there, Gavin Mizunu, who went to City for €450,000 or €500,000. I think we got another €100,000 there because he made a cap there for Ireland recently, as you mentioned. He was actually with Celtic. He trained with Celtic. And I'm not saying there was no follow-up, but I don't think both parties were playing well. I don't think Mizunu was too pleased with the way he went to training. He said that something went wrong there. Anyway, I won't say what it is because I'm not fully sure, but he was certainly on Celtic's radar, and he was over at Lennox Town. He did train with Celtic for a few nights, but I think he came home early from that trip. So Man City did then definitely got involved. And those other clubs interested in Spurs. But to answer your question, I think Celtic are, you know, will be kept well in about any Rovers players. There's a guy that's going to go to Inter Milan, Zeffi. He's only played during the fee. Scored for the Rovers B team last year, the youngest player ever to score in the League of Ireland. Celtic were keeping tabs on him as well. But I think he's going to Inter Milan very shortly. So there will be some kind of link there where Celtic will be kept up to speed, but they don't automatically go to Celtic if there's a better deal elsewhere, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I was just wondering because, as you say, you know, billionaires don't throw money around, but again, €2 million would be only a drop in the ocean for Dermot. But it's like you, Jay, it's very hard to get £2 off you, you know, towards a bottle of cider at the weekend. As I said in your intro there, like, you've been around the block when it comes to watching football. You've been to CFC United, you're part of Shamrock Rovers, you've seen this week what Motherwell, a club with real fan power, can do when they issued cash refunds or the option of a free season book for next season for those who bought into it this season, you know, and were unable to attend any games. Now, the Celtic Trust have offered a great incentive to Celtic, you know, which doesn't involve any cash, keeps all the cash in the club because we're going to need cash for the new manager to buy players. And their initiative was the Celtic shares proposal. And it hasn't been accepted by the Celtic board as yet, and it doesn't look like it's going to be accepted. It hasn't been universally backed by the Celtic support, even though no other proposal has come forward from any other of the supporters associations or supporters groups. And I just single out two supporters groups there because they have publicly come out and backed the proposal, and that's both Ultra Groups, the Boys and the Green Brigade. Are you surprised, Jason, that we're not united as a support behind the trust?
Again, because of the broad support there, it is a brilliant measure. I think it's super. When I heard of Force, when I heard Jeanette and Dave Lowe talking about a Force show, I thought it was a great idea. As again, you know, the club are not going to lose out the total amount. If they did have to give a refund, you know, for on the season tickets, you know, wherever Motherwell received in season ticket money compared to what Celtic is, you know, you can imagine the differential there. But yes, yeah, a lot of people that, you know, it looks like we'll be in the grounds next year. And a lot of people have been in tough times. Whatever about the groups or, you know, obviously fair play to the other groups are backing it. Whatever about like the association or other clubs coming out and fully backing it. Individually, like, you know, you can understand the odd person that would want. And I know they've spoke about that and then they feel it well at ease of that, you know, the Celtic Trust. You know, if you have lost a few quid during COVID, you're not working full time, you know, and you want, we're going to be back in the grounds next year. Hopefully, you know, that you probably want that 500 quid you've paid to pay for your season ticket next year, you know. You can kind of understand that bit. But again, Celtic is just so huge, you know, to get everybody, you know, singing out the same hymn sheet, you know. It rarely happens. And you mentioned the two ultra groups there, you know, the Boys and the Green Brigade. If ever, you know, something splits the Celtics apart, it's some of the actions from these guys, you know. I really haven't had any issues with any of the, you know, the actions or the banners or the displays or the statements from the Green Brigade or the Boys. But obviously, there's a lot of people out there who, you know, who don't think it has any place in football. But people think politics shouldn't be in football. I don't know where they come from, or they have no emotional attachment. Why was Celtic formed? You know, Celtic was formed for a reason as well, you know, and we can never get away from losing them roots.
Okay, Jay, we spoke about the wife, which is Rovers. We spoke about the mistress, which is Celtic. What about sharing some of those European terrace flings with us?
Ah, there was some good ones, yeah. Rovers and Celtic, yeah. I remember a good one with Celtic was actually Martin O'Neill's first European game, would have been in the 2000s. And myself, Derry Brady and Kieran Down. We flew, it was in Luxembourg. I think it was Spar or Luxembourg. And we flew over. I think it was the night that reincarnated Bobby Pettit. You know, Bobby Pettit, just we saw it's only against the Luxembourg team, but he was getting the ball and going by three or four players. But we didn't know then it was a forerun for what things we were going to see from Bobby that season. But that was a good trip. He flew over there and he stayed in Luxembourg a couple of nights. Lovely country. And from there, we got a train from Luxembourg to Cologne and we stayed with a St. Pauli fan. And it was that weekend, it was the first time I went to see St. Pauli playing. It was the first day of the season in Germany. I think they were in one of the lower leagues. I think it was either the League Two or maybe would even below that. And it was just an unbelievable experience. We travelled in to see, there was a team called Allen. And the ground was kind of like in the middle of the country. It's like one of those old League of Ireland grounds you see now, Newcastle West or Monaghan's ground, kind of in the middle of nowhere or Longford. And we went to see St. Pauli. And I'd never, to this day, I'll always remember, you know, I've been involved with loads of fans and being at ground where fans have got behind teams and, you know, the old cliche, the 12th man. But St. Pauli were getting beaten 3-1 in this game. I think it was about 20, 25 minutes to go. And three ends of the ground were St. Pauli fans. This was only a small rural called Allen. And like there must have been 3,000 or 4,000 St. Pauli fans there. And they just kept that behind the team, non-stop, now come on you boys and you know, all that song. They came back and won the game 5-3 and it was just remarkable. It was one of the best games or one of the biggest influence of, you know, it's had on me, you know, it's stayed with me all over the years. And at the end of the game, the St. Pauli players come down and the usual, all holding their hands and putting their hands in the air and the fans reacting. It was absolutely brilliant, you know. Was one of those games where, you know, I've been to St. Pauli a few times since, mostly away. I think I've only seen it play once in Hamburg itself. But me and Jerry used to do these trips, used to go away regularly. We call it a German football weekend. We do usually late January or late February, and we'd go over to Germany and try and catch three games in over the weekend. on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So we'd go crack on some of them. There's one I told on the other thing, the famous story I said on a recent podcast and all about it. We went to see a team called Duisburg playing away to Kaiserslautern. We stayed in Duisburg and it was a 4-hour bus journey. We came out that morning and we got on the bus. You know, we couldn't believe we found the bus at Duisburg bus. We hadn't planned that with anybody. And we came out of the hotel and there was a bus literally leaving there. So we traveled 4 hours down on that bus. Good supper. I remember drinking hot wine, mulled wine at the match. It was so cold. So it was a 4-hour bus journey back. And I said to Jer, two of us looked at each other. I knew we were both thinking the same thing. We're walking out of the ground. So I don't fancy this 4-hour bus journey home. You? He says, no, tell you what, we're not due to leave to the hotel in Duisburg for 2 days. What we'll do is we'll stay here tonight and we'll get a train back tomorrow. Grant. But that was that. Settled. No arguments between the two of us. We've had that. I know that look with Jared all over the years when the both of us have the same idea. We're both sitting the same thing. So off we went into the nearest pubs, drinking with all the Kaiserslautern fans, you know, in rounds, buying shots, etc. About an hour and a half later, the doors just burst open and it's just the German police, about 7 or 8 German police. And they just look, they're looking up around and they just see me and Jared. We obviously didn't look too German that they're easy to pick us out and just grabbed the two of us and grabbed us out the door. So I'm looking at Brady and saying, what's going on here? He says, what did you do? He said, I didn't do that. Well, I said, I didn't do that. You must have done something. So we're sitting there and we're just throwing to the back of the police van and we're looking at each other, nonplussed, none the wiser. And he drives back down and he drives back down to the stadium and it's an hour and a half, nearly 2 hours later, I'd say, and the bus that brought us from Duisburg is just sitting there waiting for us. They wouldn't leave before us. So you can imagine the looks you're getting. We got back in that bus. It was cold enough outside, I tell you, but the atmosphere in the bus on the way back was a little bit colder.
Well, I tell you this much, Jim Mervyn wouldn't have waited for you.
Oh, no. Yeah, boy, you got the one next week. The bus back to Belfast to follow me.
Brilliant, Jay, because I'm a bit like you. I love, for me, sitting down to watch a game on telly, 90 minutes, it's yeah, it passes 90 minutes, but it's not the same as the whole match day experience. You know, even the smells around grounds, you know, fried onions and burgers and, you know, smell stale ale from the pubs. And I did describe it as a terrace anorak, but it's a massive part of your life, isn't it?
Ah, yeah. So we've lost out on all that. You know, it's football is much more than 90 minutes, you know, definitely, you know, when you travel away with Celtic, most of the plane trips now are, it can't be, you know, Rovers away trip of a Friday. You know, you're in work, you've your half day booked, you can see that the sun has split the trees. You can't wait to get out, you know, get on the bus. And it's far more than that's what we could have missed out this year. You know, I've been lucky enough last year, I was at a lot of Rovers games, you know, I kind of get in there because I write for the programme and I do an article for the programme about what it was like with no crowd there. So I get in for the game and I was there as a ball boy and as a steward. So I got to a lot of the games last year, a lot of the Rovers home games, you know, I was at the 8th Milan match, which is obviously brilliant to be able to get to that. But, you know, some of the lads thought you'd be patronised by saying, because they were obviously discussing they couldn't go to the games and I was there and I wasn't gloating or saying, listen, I'm there, brilliant. But I was just telling them that it's just not the same, you know. You're going in to watch 90 minutes of football. There's no crowds. There's nobody within 100 yards, 200 yards of you. You're not singing chants, you know. You're not having a point before the match or the half-time. You're not discussing the halves. You're not going out afterwards for a few points to discuss the game with the lads. You're just going home. Like, that's all part of the football experience, you know. And it's great, you know. And at whatever level, you know, as you said, I watch FC United. I watch Cliftonville a lot as well. Cliftonville, obviously, the Cliftonville support will be kind of drawn from the same place as the Celtic support will be and will be similar, you know. And I love going to Cliftonville. Obviously, it's a lot smaller scale than Celtic. But you get up there and you're made welcome, you know the lads. And there's only a couple of, maybe, you know, maybe a couple of hundred in the social club after the match. The players will come in. You know, the players still come in. And then you have a drink with the players afterwards. Then you go out in the town of Belfast, get the bus home. It's great the buses run, you know, through the night from Belfast. You know, you can get a bus home, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, wherever the night goes for you. You know, you can do that. And it's all part of the day out. You know, the day is sometimes going to a second day. But football is not about the 90 minutes. And it doesn't matter what level you watch at. You know, football is about, you know, the camaraderie, being with like-minded people, celebrating goals. You know, if Shamrock Rovers scored a winning goal in the cup final, it means as much to a fan than if Celtic hit and Henrik Larsson equalised in 2003 in Seville against Porto, where there was thousands and thousands of Celtic fans there. It's still there. You're a football fan, you know. That's what you go for. It's for those moments, you know, to have us all hooked. And, you know, you build up relations with people on bus journeys, on train journeys, you know, staying overnight in some place. You know, this is what football's all about. The 90 minutes of play are incidental. And of course, you know, sometimes yourself on European trips, the 90 minutes play are probably forgotten about because you don't remember them anyway. It's the rest of it that you remember. You remember more about the trips and what happened there and on the way back than you do sometimes about the football on the pitch.
Yeah, like, and hopefully, Jay, now the vaccine will become the game changer, you know, over the next few months, and we'll see fans getting back into stadiums, because there's going to be fans at the Euros and there's going to be fans at I think the Scottish Cup, they're talking with fans. So, but that's only one part of it. Getting back into the stadiums only one part of it. You know what's going to be great, Jay? People getting off social media and WhatsApp groups and getting back into the pub or on the supporters pub bus, or if it's a cafe to go to before the games, just to sit down and talk with like-minded people.
That's unbelievable. Actually, just funny you say that. I wrote an article, obviously, you know, I write for the Shamrock Rovers programme, and I submitted an article just the other night about for the Derry City programme this Saturday. Rovers are playing Derry and Tallaght, and I actually did mention that. What was like WhatsApp groups, I says, because I kind of find that more, because you're not discussing the football besides some of the match, you know, besides you're discussing it on a WhatsApp group, and it's mad to see the way people's opinions change, you know. Like, I always say football fans are probably the most fickle people in the world. And we all are. I've done stupid things, said stupid things to be sure, a few minutes later. But on the WhatsApp groups is grand. But you can see it all. If your team's doing well, they're playing well, everything's rosy in the garden. If you go a goal down, then your opinion of players are changing and you're a little bit more critical. But that's football, you know. We all watch it. But the WhatsApp groups, you know, are to be ticking over, and but absolutely nowhere near as good as discussing it with somebody, or shouting at somebody that match beside you, or sitting down for a pint afterwards, as you say, no matter where you'll be, you know, in Glasgow, wherever, to discuss it, you know. You just love them moments, you know. Even win, lose, or draw, you know, it's them moments, you know, when you get back to it. You know, we've all been in the horrors after a match. I think the last one I can remember when I walked into a Parkhead and we lost was beaten by the Huns 2-1, you know, the last New Year, the last Parkhead. I remember walking up the Gallagate after that, you know, and we walked all the way to town, the Gallagate, and just, we ended up winning the league that year, of course, you know, because after that. But the despondency had you left the ground that day, you know, and it looked like the Huns were going to come back that year and win the league. I think they won the game in hand. They'd gone 2 points ahead of us. Obviously, it didn't materialise. But one of them bad moments, we haven't had too many of them over the years, except in the last 10 years. But it was one of them moments where, you know, you really were, you know, it was really despondent, and you'd feel the mood, thousands and thousands of people, you know, treading up the Gallagate back towards town, and you know, the somber mood was there. But you're with like-minded people discussing that. You take the good with the bad, you know?
Yeah, when Paul Heaton was on, Jay, he was just talking in general about, you know, social media. And like, he was saying, you know, we need to get down to pub again, you know, because if you say something stupid, someone will tell you to shut up.
Yeah, I heard him saying that. Yeah, that very valid point. It's true, you know. You can waffle on behind it, you know, and spout as much shit as you want, especially these guys that have the hidden profiles on Twitter, etc. You know, they can waffle on and, you know, abuse people, but, you know, you're not pulled up on it as you should be, where Paul's exactly right. Yeah, if you're in a pub or even on a bus and you say something stupid, you won't be sure of people telling you to shut up.
Yeah, and we still have to enjoy the live gigs of the last album, but I can imagine the next album. I think social media and these lockdowns are going to get a double barrel from Paul.
He's had plenty of time to write them anyway. No excuse.
Yeah, talking about writing, we all know how talented Paul Heaton is of a writer, but you're not bad out scribbling yourself, Jay, from your early days in the Glenmalure Gazette, but your articles have been too infrequent for my liking for more than 90 minutes. When are you going to get the old typewriter
No one keeps saying that. I was going to write an article. Just not being to the games, and just, you know, my articles are not kind of opinion-based articles, or they're not, you know, how the team is doing it. They're more about, again, what we spoke about, the fans' experience and getting to the game and the trips and stuff like that. So it's trying to get, you know, motivated that way. I will go 1 minute as well. We'll get back to
you. You're not the only one, like Scott Crystal and Michael Pringle, lads that would write away days for us. Their thing is the whole fan experience as well. And you're kind of missing them articles. But the only thing is, we've been lucky enough that we have lads to have the great knowledge. Like if you're a terrace anorak, they're history anoraks, and lucky enough.
David Parr's stuff is unbelievable. Yeah.
And we're going, we've something coming up with David now on a regular basis as well. We're going to do kind of a history pod, but a little different, because he's just like, I'm lucky enough to share some time with Dave, and like, he's just been amazed listening to him. And like, I've read all his books and that, but his knowledge is just like, just these players I've never heard of. And, you know, especially on the audio on the podcast when he's telling something, you know, and the way he rolls his words, and he is that school teacher. And you just imagine if you were sitting in his classroom when he'd be telling a story, he'd have your attention.
Yeah. If the history of Celtic was on the O level curriculum, I think the pupils probably get A's. Yeah,
definitely. But it's funny, like, I think now people are, I think kids that go to college now and university can actually start. They can do stuff like that now, whereas before you when I went to school, you mentioned football and it wasn't in PE, you get a slap, a clip on the back of the head, and if it was soccer, Jay. You know, you might get two clips if it was a Gaelic man that was teaching you.
Oh, so stop. So we weren't allowed, when I went to school in primary school in De La Salle, we weren't allowed to play football in the yard, soccer in the yard, you know, just Gaelic school. You know, we had to use that to sneak tennis balls in, man, to play on the ground. They wouldn't let you play football. We used to play with a tennis ball on our lunch break and try and hide it from the brothers. But that's the way it was then, yeah.
Man, so, now listen, I always put Army guests on the podcast into the Celtic Soul time machine. So if Jason Maloney is climbing in, you've some memories, you know. Where does Jason Maloney take us back to?
I would like, maybe you could pick a match that you would have loved to be at.
Give us both. Give us one you were at and one you would like to be at.
Well, the one I would like to be at, that I was just about to start following Celtic, and it's probably the reason why, funny enough. And it was only the anniversary's just gone by, the 3rd of May, was the 5-0 game against St. Mirren at Love Street when he won the league, you know, against all expectations. We were miles behind Hearts with a few games to go. And we gradually ebbed the way at their lead before we won the league. But that day seems to be unbelievable. And you hear people talking about it. I know, talked to people like Jason Higgins about it a few times, and what a day that was. And I remember, like, I remember the day and how it was announced, because obviously there was no mobile phones and no internet to get it. I remember being coming home from town, going towards Dolphins Bar, the time it was. And I jumped off the bus, and Liverpool actually won the league that day against Chelsea. And that was live on RTE. I remember just running to the pub trying to get it. And Albert McCready was actually there because he lived in that area. And he was on the other side of the pub. And George Hamilton, that's how I found out Celtic had won the league. George Hamilton just announced, he goes, and the camera focused on Kenny Dalglish. He scored a winning goal. And Kenny Dalglish has scored the winning goal today. And he won't know it now, but his former team have just won the league in Scotland. And I go, what? You know, we didn't know it was 1-0, 2-0, 5-0. I didn't know Hearts were getting beaten. I didn't know Albert Kidd had scored for Dundee once, let alone twice. I remember just looking down at Albert. I just started to know him then and ran down to the field. Was there just jumping around, you know. That was like, I would love to be there that day. And obviously the football we played and the goal, the famous goal there with the move out, you know, attack with Brian McLaren involved and Danny McGrain. So that would have been one. And just fully because of that, as a kind of, we start following Celtic because of that game, Celtic qualified for the European Cup, and Rovers had won the league that year as well. So Rovers actually drew Celtic in the European Cup. So believe it, that was the first time I actually saw Celtic in a competitive game, was against Rovers in Milltown. It was the last European game in Milltown. So that's the reason why that result meant that Celtic played Rovers in Europe. I did get a chance to see Celtic play for the first time. Yeah, so that definitely was what was the one. And the favourite, yeah, again, the month of May, again, another one that just recently went by. The anniversary was last week. My favourite game in Scotland ever was definitely the day we stopped the 10, the 9th of May, 1998. What a day that was, from start to finish, the weekend. That was just unbelievable, you know. The tension surrounding us for that whole day was just, it's hard to describe. I went to a lot of games that year, probably did around 40 games that year, did a few away games as well, you know. And it was and it wasn't like now where nearly every game was on TV, so they played a different time than you did. Like, some of the days, you both played at the same time and the result was going to get, and you'd hear a cheer in the stadium, they'd gone a goal down. And it obviously come down to the last day of the season. I just remember being in the welcome in before the match and just the tension. Someone put "You Never Walk Alone" in the jukebox. It was a real sunny day and people were outside the pub and the pub was packed. And you could just feel, we'd all sing "You Never Walk Alone" a million times on buses and stadiums around Europe at European nights in Parkhead. But this was in the pub, the welcome in. It was, you know, hairs in the back of your neck stuff. It was just unbelievable. And then to carry on to the ground. And then obviously we scored early enough. You think that would have eased our nerves. It actually didn't, you know. Your man George O'Boyle almost scored for them, and then until Harold Bradbach scored that second goal, then just the sheer relief, you could just feel it in the stadium. It wasn't even joy or delight, just the relief that came out. And then the night, then the time we actually went to see, was the plans, we went to the Clatter Club beside the Queen's Park that night. We had a great night that night. I think it was the Planning Club, was it? Was Janine played in it. Anyway, it was a brilliant night we had. And that was definitely my favourite game, you know. So the month of May has been good for Celtic. Obviously, May is probably a month that's synonymous with winning titles. So that's probably why.
Yeah, I remember that day and night well. A disgruntled Rangers fan broke a bottle and tried to stick it in my neck that day in broad daylight in the city centre after the match. And I remember that night, but everyone was singing Harold Brat back, because it used to be sending back.
Yeah, he was very frustrated. I remember one day Brat back, he scored. I'm not sure what that season or the season after. We beat Kilmarnock 4-0 at Parkhead, and he got 4 goals. Well, I'm not joking, he should have got 10. Should have got 10 or 12 goals. That's not even exaggerating. The amount of chances he had that day, it was unbelievable. Yeah, he's a one man I never know. Probably the only man ever to be criticised after getting 4 goals in a match to win 4-0.
And another thing you mentioned there, Jay, it's like Harold, it's long gone. The welcome in.
Hi, great pub, yeah. Yeah, I think Frank sadly passed away last year, yeah. Pub went a few years ago, but that was always there. Choice. We get off the bus at 12 o'clock and be ready doing an overnighter, you know. And then we'd always head there before the match, you know, after travelling through the night and on the ferry, the bus would always leave us there at the Gallagher and we'd rush around to the welcome in. Great pub. Used to love going there match days.
And the old Squirrel was an old haunt of Nave Park back in the day as well. When was it John Lee had it?
John Lee, yeah, John Lee McCullough. Yeah, he owned it there. Yeah, we used to go there as well. Yeah, we used to go with John was there.
The old brown carpet, you know, if you didn't stick to that brown carpet, there's something wrong.
Oh, no, definitely. Yeah. So good nights in there as well. It's great. Yeah, good to see you well again.
Some great memories. And just before we finish, Jay, another thing you don't see anymore is when you mentioned, you know, both teams playing at the same time and then the cheer would go up in the stadium. There was always an old boy with a transistor radio and a little earpiece. And he was the one that was given he was listening to the other game and he was the one that was given the nod, and then that's when the cheers went up. Now everybody has a phone. They can check their bets. They can change their bets. You know, sometimes people watch their phone at a match more than they watch the game.
That's mad. Yeah, the elder, you could be even the League of Ireland. I watch a Rovers. You're a good one. Just a quick one. Rovers playing years ago. I think we were going for the league, and Bowes are near as challenger. You know, it was a Sunday afternoon in Ireland. Everybody played in Sunday afternoons at that time, and you know, Bowes were playing, and we were going for the league together. We were winning down that loan, and then one of the lads listening is right. And he just jumps up and goes, yes! And we're all, yeah, what happened? It's still nil all. He says, it's still nil all. You know, and said, we thought someone had scored against us. It's still nil all.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. I must get David Potter to write an article on, you know, what you don't see in football anymore.
Yeah, that would definitely be there. Yeah, obviously it was renowned. The game I mentioned there, Love Street, I think that would have been the most famous. But then it can go wrong sometimes as well. You hear false rumours going around the stadium and people jump up around that are getting false news, you know. That happens as well. You've seen that a few times.
False hope.
Yeah.
Listen, Jay, it's been an absolute pleasure, and I'm delighted that you're on the mend from COVID-19 and you'll be returning to work soon, and hopefully we'll all be returning to football stadium soon.
That's it. That's the hopes. Definitely for obviously this year, for I'm sure Celtic will have, I think you'll probably have people in with pre-season friendlies next year. Definitely. I think there's one announced against West Ham. So how would the likes of that? You'll start to see fans from there and then gradually increase from then on. Fingers crossed, Milish.
Hopefully. As I said, Jay, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much. And don't forget, we want you on Talk of the Terrace.
No problem. Just give me a shout. Cheers, Milish.
Great to see Jason back on the mend after his struggle with the old COVID-19. He is a football encyclopedia. He absolutely loves the game. And I'm looking forward to having him on the Talk of the Terrace soon. Well, folks, I'm happy to say I had a great bit of news this week. There was something hanging over my head and it's now gone. And I can get back now to getting the fans in together. So I'm looking forward to getting more than 90 minutes. The last issue of the season now. The full band are back together. And we definitely will have that out now in the next week or two. If you haven't picked up issue 114, we still have a couple of the print copies left, and it's also available in Digipharma if you would like to purchase a copy. As always, I have to thank Ronan McQuillan for producing the show. Quality job as always, Ronan. Thank you very much. And if you like what we're doing and you would like to support us, you can do so by visiting CelticFanzine.com, where you can become a member, you can subscribe, you can buy a fanzine or a t-shirt or a bit of merchandise, and you can donate for the price of a pint or the price of a cup of coffee. Don't forget to check out our website for some excellent articles and long reads. We have some great stuff coming up next week. Please download our app. It's free and you'll have access to all the podcasts, articles, daily news, video, upcoming events, the fanzine and our online shop, all at the touch of a button on your phone or tablet. And all episodes of the podcast are now available across all platforms. So please hit the subscribe or follow button so you'll never miss an episode and you'll get alerted when one drops out. Because we have more now than just the Celtic Soul podcast. We've got the Talk of the Terrace, Celtic AM shows are now available on the podcast platforms. And we've also a couple of bonus podcasts coming up next week. So listen out for them. On Celtic Fanzine TV, Dan's been busy walking away with me and we have another Talk of the Terrace with Average Joe Miller on maybe Tuesday night. And again, I'll remind us that we'll be talking about Palestine and Joe's time over there when he went over to see Celtic playing. And we'll also have David Potter joining us later in the week for a new history podcast where we will be discussing Celtic's cult heroes over the decades. And he should know a thing or two because he actually wrote the book on Celtic cult heroes. Well, he wrote most books on Celtic, didn't he? So, folks, get on social media. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter and LinkedIn. And all the details will be in the podcast description. And if your business, Celtic Supporters Club, Rich Uncle, Rich Auntie like Celtic and like the podcast and would like to become a sponsor, please email us at info@celticfanzine.com. And as always, you can contact us through the website, message us on social media, and we really appreciate the support. And once again, folks, if you enjoy the podcast, we don't have a Patreon, we don't have a paywall, but if you can support us, you can do so by donating a fiver or whatever you can afford. So once again, thank you very much to everyone who has donated or sponsored us over the season. And if you want to listen to some more, I suppose, for the listening, and you've enjoyed the chat with Jason, can I recommend a couple of other podcasts we had with Celtic fans who would have travelled with Jason on some of those buses over the years. Episode 36, we had Kieran Kenny. Episode 39, the famous Adrian Hilly-Hillman. And episode 47, another famous man, we had Mark Bourke on the show. All fans with great stories to tell. It's Hibs on Saturday. I always enjoy Easter Road and the trip to Edinburgh for our away days. Wasn't to be this season. However, I am hopeful of returning next season and I'm looking forward to getting back over to Glasgow, Edinburgh and throughout Scotland and even the odd trip to Europe because I've just got word that I'm getting my first vaccine next week. So looking forward to that. And apparently I'll have my second one within 4 weeks. So then I'm ready to go, folks, I think. The season's over. But we'll continue to produce quality content across all our platforms till the pubs open in June. And then we're going to take a few weeks off because we want to have a few beers, a bite to eat, and we want to support the local economy. So, folks, thanks for listening all season. Thanks for supporting us. Stay safe, keep the faith, and we play out with the very, very talented Erin Boyle and her poetic tribute to Scott Brown entitled Bruni. Best of luck, Scott Brown. We will miss you. But we will move on and don't come back and haunt us when you're with Aberdeen.
Iconic, invincible, irreplaceable. Celtic's number 8. A signing of fate. Came good times, the glory days, home and away. Easy. No battling whatsoever. I think the scoreline talks for itself. It was men versus boys at the end of the day. He says. With Joey Barton in his back pocket. The look in his eyes, he's piling on the agony and putting it on in style. He's taunting the city with that look. He's got them shook, rent free in their heads. He's got 11 men trembling, 60,000 are assembling. It's a war when Brown's on the pitch. He's got an itch for silverware. There's fire in the air as he tears down midfield in green and white. The opposition shields and he fights. An invincible treble. A double treble, a treble treble, a quadruple treble, and 9 in a row for the second time. And we know that our heroes gone by and our loved ones in the sky. We'll be looking down in paradise with tears in their eyes. The ghosts of the jungle will be singing his name game after game. And we'll tell our grandlings about the times that we've had. Our captain, leader, legends, through the good times and the bad. 10
1,000 Kano kids with big dreams and tears in their eyes in section 115. I'm going to be the next Scott Brown, I hear them say. I'm going to play at Paradise. A Kano patron and a soulful man, giving his time to fans in the stands. We thank you, Bruni. We'll try and hold back the tears, but just know that your legacy will live on throughout the years.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.